నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తతో జయముదీరయేత్ నష్టప్రాయేష్ భద్రేషు నిత్యం భాగవత సేవయా భగవతి ఉత్తమ శ్లోకే భక్తిర్భవతి నైష్ఠికీ. హరే కృష్ణ. సో వీఆర్ రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం క్యాంటో 11 చాప్టర్ 7 టెక్స్ట్ నంబర్ 2 and 3. టెక్స్ట్ 2. మయా నిష్పాడితం హ్యత్ర మయా నిష్పాదితం హ్యత్ర దేవకార్యమశేషతః దేవకార్యమశేషతః యదర్థమవతీర్ణోహం యదర్థమవతీర్ణోహం అంశేన బ్రహ్మణార్థితః అంశేన బ్రహ్మణార్థితః మయా నిష్పాదితం హ్యత్ర దేవకార్యమశేషతః యదర్థమవతీర్ణోహం అంశేన బ్రహ్మణార్థితః మయా నిష్పాదితం హ్యత్ర దేవకార్యమశేషతః యదర్థమవతీర్ణోహం అంశేన బ్రహ్మణార్థితః. మయా నిష్పాదితం హ్యత్ర దేవకార్యమశేషతః యదర్థమవతీర్ణోహం అంశేన బ్రహ్మణార్థితః. మయా నిష్పాదితం హ్యత్ర అంశేన బ్రహ్మణార్థితః మయా బై మీ నిష్పాదితం accomplished he certainly atra within this world devakaryam work for the benefit of the demigods asheshatah completely with nothing remaining yat for whose artham sake avatirna incarnated aham I amshena with my plenary portion baladev brahmana by lord brahma arthitah being prayed for. Translation: answering the prayer of lord brahma I descended within this world along with my plenary portion lord baladev and performed various activities on behalf of the demigods. I have now completed my mission here. Text 3. Kulam Vaishapa Nirdagdham Nankshatyanyonya Vigrahat Samudra Saptamehenam Purim Chaplava Ishati. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. Now due to the Brahmana's curse, the Yadu dynasty will certainly perish by fighting among themselves. And on the seventh day from today, the ocean will rise up and inundate the city of Dwarka. Purport. In this and the following verses, Lord Krishna indicates to Uddhava that he should immediately fix himself in self-realization by giving up all identification with the material world. Srila Jiva Goswami has pointed out that the Yadu dynasty was not actually destroyed by Lord Krishna, but merely removed from the vision of the world through the curse of the Brahmanas. Similarly, the Lord's eternal abode, Dwarka, can never be drowned by the ocean. Nevertheless, all external approaches to this transcendental city were covered by the ocean, and thus the Lord's abode remains inaccessible to foolish persons in Kali Yuga, as will be described later in this canto. By the Lord's mystic potency called Yoga Maya, he reveals his own form, abode, paraphernalia, pastimes, entourage, and so on. And at the suitable time, he removes all of these from our mundane sight. Although bewildered, conditioned souls may doubt the spiritual potency of the Lord, the pure devotees can directly perceive and relish his transcendental appearance and disappearance, which are described in Bhagavad Gita as Janma Karma Chame Divyam. If one faithfully accepts this perfect knowledge of the Lord's transcendental nature, then surely one will go back home, back to Godhead, and become an eternal companion of Lord Krishna. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute. Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So we'll discuss this verse from the section called Uddhava Gita. This is the beginning. This chapter is the first chapter in the entire series of Uddhava Gita, which consists of about 23 chapters, in contrast to 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. So in one article, Satyaraj Prabhu writes that there are several Gitas. In the Bhagavatam itself, we have Gopi Gita, we have Bhramara Gita, Uddhava Gita, then we have Bhikshu Gita. So all these Gitas are there. So what qualifies a certain prayer to be a Gita, we don't know exactly. Certain sections have been entitled as Gitas. Certain prayers have been titled as Gitas. and other prayers have not been titled as Gitas. So what exactly is the technical difference, we are not sure. But certain titles have gained prominence and they have famously been known as Gitas. So Uddhava Gita is one such Gita which is considered very important, especially for devotees. In one purport, Prabhupada writes, Uddhava Gita contains knowledge which is even more confidential than Bhagavad Gita. Certain sections that Krishna could not describe in the Gita because of the battlefield setting, he could elaborate to Uddhava in Uddhava Gita. So, in the beginning, towards the last section of the earlier chapter, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur comments that the prime purpose of Krishna speaking the Uddhava Gita is to describe the supreme process of liberation. Liberation from the cycle of birth and death. And the prime method is hearing and chanting about Krishna's glorious activities and name and form. By following this process, one can attain supreme liberation and attain pure love of Krishna. So these entire 23 chapters are going to elaborate on this theme. And as Krishna also described in the Gita, Janma Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yo Veti Tattvata. So here, this is an again elaboration on the same theme. So today we will try to discuss on this principle of how hearing about Krishna is so important for our spiritual progress. Although the Yuga Dharma is chanting of the holy names, Kirtaniya Sadahari, but hearing about Krishna sufficiently in right proportion and the right subject matters will help us fix our mind in chanting the holy names and chanting Krishna's glories. Without proper hearing, if you take to chanting, the chanting may not sustain for long, or the chanting may be just mechanical without being able to relish the whole process. So when we have proper knowledge through proper hearing about the whole philosophy and the science behind it, then we can fix our mind in chanting the holy names according to our acharyas. So for any process, we have a certain core activity. Even in regular mundane science, you see there are certain set methods in order to achieve the goal. And spiritual life being a proper science, like any other science, there is a certain set principles which when followed properly will lead us to the right goal and destination. So, like we see in movies, no, there are lovers, a boy and a girl running after each other, and they are madly in love with each other. And what do we find their prime quality, prime symptom of such people who are infatuated or addicted to that kind of relationship? Now, these people always think about them. They are in their own world. Right? Someone who is attached to someone, is in love with someone, they are totally unaware of what's happening in their surroundings, and they always think of them, they chant their names, think and discuss about. They like to discuss about the other person. In this way, discussing a person's qualities and name and form is a sign of love, a sign of attachment to that person. Right? It's not just mechanical. You can't force a boy or a girl to chant someone's name and then develop love. When there's attachment and love for a person, then automatically these things manifest in that person's activities. Right? So similarly, the same principle applies to Krishna. Someone who is madly in love with Krishna, is attached to Krishna, he will enjoy discussing about Krishna, chanting his holy names, remembering him. But the difference in this case is, for people who don't have that love for Krishna, then the method or the process to attain that love is the same. The means and the end are the same. So the goal is to love Krishna wholeheartedly and enter into a state where we are constantly hearing and chanting about Krishna. And if you don't have, if you are not on that stage, then you practice that stage, practice that process, and eventually reach that stage. And that's the interesting part about this this science. The means and the end are identical. The only difference is our attachment. In the beginning, we chant and hear about Krishna as a matter of duty, as a matter of regulation. And once that process develops and matures, then we reach a stage where we chant and hear about Krishna out of spontaneous love, natural love. So, in one section, most of the points I have collected is from Shivaram Maharaj's writings, where he goes into elaborate details about the whole science of hearing, what to hear, how to hear, and all those details. So, he says, the purer the heart, the deeper the absorption in Krishna consciousness. And the deeper the absorption, the more accessible the higher stages of development. So if our chanting and hearing is not absorbing enough for us, then all these deeper stages of realization and ecstasy, all those things that we hear in scriptures, will remain inaccessible. And all these things will remain simply a theory. And we may even start doubting whether such things exist or not, whether we can ever attain these things or not. It's all because we are not deeply absorbed in the process, which is because of impure heart. So because our hearts are full of anarthas and other unwanted qualities, we are unable to absorb our minds into these activities. And then he says, beginners chant to achieve love of God. Perfected devotees chant impelled by love. So we are doing this, all these things, because we want to attain a certain stage. But those are already perfect. They are already impelled by love. So whether we are beginners or whether we are advanced or whether we are perfect, the process of chanting and hearing never stops. It continues at all stages. Now, the important thing is what to hear and what are the topics that we need to select in order to gradually and systematically progress. So later in the 11th canto, Krishna speaks a verse. He says, Sve sve dhikare yanishtha saguna parikirtitaha viparyayastu doshasyad ubhayo resha nishchaya. So this verse is talking about nishtha or steadiness in our practices of Krishna consciousness. So once we are steady at a certain stage, now this principle applies again to every other subject matter. If you want to, you know, even in school, we are at a certain standard, say 5th standard, we study, and then when we have cleared our exams, we go to the next standard. So in order to get promoted to higher standards of education, we have to be steady at a certain stage, we have to clear those tests and exams. And automatically you are promoted. Unless there is some exceptional case where the student is extra genius, and then you may get promoted to higher stage. But overall, generally, for most people, most children, they have to go step by step. And that's automatic and natural. Artificially jumping to higher stages of advancement is not encouraged, and it won't sustain long. So here, Krishna is saying, one who is steady in Krishna consciousness, such a person is qualified to take up more advanced or higher spiritual practices. Deviation from one's position is considered impiety, and steadiness in one's position is considered piety. So one aspect of irreligion, Shivaram Swami writes, this is a nice point. One aspect of irreligion is to adopt spiritual practices more advanced than those for which we are not qualified.
So I am at a certain stage, and I am impressed by someone who is at a higher stage, and I want to imitate. So I artificially adopt those practices and try to apply it in my life. That is considered irreligion, especially among devotee circles. This will lead to our fall down eventually. Like Sahajiyas, that's what they do, right? They artificially try to imitate the gopis and adopt their practices. And eventually we find that they are also engaging in other illicit activities. Not that exactly they are under the position of gopis. So adopting higher stages of higher practices, which are beyond our qualification, is considered irreligious. And similarly, another aspect of irreligion is to neglect the duties of a higher stage at which one is steadily situated. So we are at a certain stage and we are qualified to follow certain practices. And if we don't practice, it is considered irreligion. So for example, if we are in the movement for say 5 years or 10 years, we are expected to follow the four regulative principles, chant 16 rounds. And if we are still chanting only 1 or 2 rounds, that is considered irreligion. And that is considered lack of seriousness in bhakti. So, like Rupa Goswami says, niyamagraha and niyamagraha. Whimsically adopting higher stages of higher practices is niyamagraha. And neglecting our own, neglecting practices that we are suited to follow, eligible to follow, that is also irreligion or niyamagraha. One is spiritual impertinence or impudence, like adopting higher stages. The other is spiritual lethargy. Lazy to practice practices that we are qualified to practice. Lazily sticking to a lower stages of practice. Both are irreligious. And then he says, when we first enter into the... So it all begins with Shraddha. As we see, the nine stages of advancement. It all begins with Shraddha. And if Shraddha has to grow nicely, the creeper of devotion, the seed of devotion has to grow into a creeper and eventually into a full-blown, full-blossoming tree, then the main challenge for a sadhaka is to clear the anarthas. So if at all we have to reach a stage of steadiness, which Krishna is talking about in this verse, then the biggest challenge is to clear the stage of anarthas, anartha nivritti. And he says, once we are clear of 70% of our anarthas, a sadhaka who has cleared 70% of anarthas, such a person has reached the stage of nishtha. So anything below 70 is still in the stage of anartha nivritti, according to him. So nishtha means you are clear from the bodily concept of life. You are not too attached to bodily needs and demands. Sleep and hunger will not bother us too much. And not that he is totally free of all anarthas. Nishtha doesn't mean completely pure devotee. But majority of the anarthas are like, which are the stumbling blocks in advancement is gone. And such people who have reached the stage of steadiness and cleared all anarthas are eligible to systematically hear about Krishna's eternal pastimes, especially the pastimes of the gopis and gopas, all those Vrindavan esoteric pastimes. Otherwise, anyone who directly jumps into those sections purposely is transgressing those principles. So therefore, in the 10th canto, we find Shukdev Goswami talking about that verse, Vikriditam Rajavadu, where he says, if a person who is affected by lust, if he hears the pastimes of the gopis, then he will be freed of lust. But unfortunately, many times if we find that when we read and hear those pastimes, we feel more lusty sometimes. Right? That's because we are not eligible to hear that pastime. We are not qualified to hear those pastimes. So for a person who is qualified, when he hears those pastimes, then he will feel ecstasy and happiness, and he will be able to relish it in the proper mood without offenses. So such faith, a person who is eligible to hear, he is not a beginner. He has already reached a quite advanced stage. And then he says, if out of fear, we don't adopt practices that we are qualified to practice, then we stagnate at that stage. We stop advancing. Prabhupada also gives an example. Spiritual life is like going upstream in a river. Right? So if you feel going upstream in a river is a fearful stage, and we say, no, I'll just stay here in one level. Then you can't stay. Eventually you will be pulled down. And we will fall back into the material consciousness. So we not only stop advancing, eventually material desires will overcome our heart, and we will we won't even maintain the status quo. We will fall from our steadiness position, whatever stage we have achieved. So therefore, for sadhakas and neophytes, our acharyas recommend especially deity worship. Because Kapil Dev says in one verse, in the third canto, he says, a devotee should regularly see my form in the temple, touch my lotus feet, and offer worshipable paraphernalia and prayer. He should see in the spirit of renunciation from the mode of goodness, and see every living entity as spiritual. This is one essential aspect of deity worship. So the advantage of deity worship is, it has two important effects on the sadhaka. First, it increases our interest to hear about Krishna. So when we worship deity, dress the deity, decorate the deity, offer food to the deity, we develop a bonding, personal bonding with the deity. And that increases our interest to hear about the Lord. And the second effect is, it bestows the ability to concentrate the mind. And once the mind is concentrated, then it increases our ability to hear more properly. Our capacity to hear. So therefore, in the beginning, if our mind is not focused, if we are unable to concentrate our minds, we feel distracted while chanting, we feel distracted while hearing Bhagavatam classes, we feel sleepy. These are all standard things we go through every day. It's all because we are unable to focus our mind on devotional subjects. So then the more we do deity worship, the more we fix our mind on the deity's pleasure and happiness, then slowly our capacity to hear attentively. It's a nice connection. It's an interesting scientific connection. Our capacity to hear about Krishna and develop interest in Krishna increases. And then we gradually advance to higher stages of advancement. Similarly, when we are speaking about Krishna, so Bhagavad Gita describes, Bhagavad Gita warns us, if when we are going to speak about Krishna, we have to be careful and selective about topics. In the 18th chapter, Krishna says, idam te na tapaskaya na bhaktaya kadachana na cha shushrushave vachyam na cha mam yobhyasuyati. This confidential knowledge may never be explained to those who are not austere or devoted or engaged in devotional service, nor to one who is envious of me. So many times people ask, if you are to preach outside, we don't know who the audience is going to be, and so many new people come, so how can we present Krishna consciousness? Because some may be faithless, some may be argumentative, some may be atheists, and if you have to speak about Krishna, then aren't we committing offenses? Aren't we not following this principle? So therefore, we have to stick to basics while preaching to new people in audience where we don't know who the audience is. And not austere, not devoted. Especially Prabhupada writes in the purport, someone who thinks Krishna is not a historical personality, just a mythological figure. To such people, we should never disclose these confidential subject matters, especially Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, gopis, pastimes of the gopis. This is as good as like we have the offense to the holy name to instruct a faithless person about the glories of the holy name. Similarly, to instruct a faithless person about Krishna's intimate pastimes is also an equally serious offense. Therefore, Prabhupada used to criticize these people who would conduct Bhagavat Saptahas. Professional Bhagavatam reciters who conduct a show of religion and spirituality. Why he would criticize these people? Because they would mainly they conducted several types of offenses while reciting this Bhagavatam. One offense they commit is they delve into elevated topics, especially the Ras Leela and other, the Ras Panchadhyaya. So they are unfit to speak, audience is unfit to hear. To such people, they speak all these elevated topics. And they make an entertainment out of the whole thing. All this discussion is not to give spiritual knowledge. They want to make money, they want to entertain the audience. That's why they discuss all these things. And all the money that they collect is used for some material purpose. It's not for again expanding the preaching or some devotional activity. So all these things make such Bhagavatam recitations offensive. And it will lead to fall down. The speaker falls down, the hearer falls down, and no one benefits. So therefore he writes, we should, if at all we want to discuss about Krishna and hear about Krishna, understand Krishna, the safest method is to hear about Lord Chaitanya. Hearing about Krishna through the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya gives us faster access, easier access to all those intimate pastimes. Why? Because Lord Chaitanya's pastimes are threefold. With new people, with ordinary public, he would chant and dance Hare Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna and dance. With devotees, he would discuss pure devotion subjects. Like the Roop Sanatan Goswami, Haridas Thakur. He would discuss philosophical subjects, the science of bhakti. And with his confidential associates, like Ramananda Rai Swarup Damodar, he would discuss about pure transcendental mellows. So when we hear Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, we get everything. And Prabhupada didn't place any specific restrictions on what to hear, what not to hear about Lord Chaitanya. With Krishna's pastimes, he is specifically restricted. We shouldn't prematurely delve into Krishna's intimate pastimes. But with pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, there is no restriction. We can discuss and hear any of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, in any form, in any sequence. So Krishna's pastimes are of two types. One is Nitya Leela, one is Naimittika Leela. Nitya Leela are the pastimes that Krishna performs, especially in the spiritual world, with the gopis, with the gopas, with all the Vrajavasis. And Naimittika pastimes are those demon-killing pastimes, which usually happens only in the material world. Demons don't exist in the spiritual world. So all those pastimes happen in the material world. And for sadhakas especially, our acharyas recommend hearing these demon-killing pastimes. These pastimes are more important than understanding and studying the eternal pastimes. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives an entire list of anarthas and the demons that represent these anarthas. There is a big list of about 70 anarthas. And how by hearing Krishna's demon killing pastimes, we can get rid of all these anarthas. I have made a short list of certain specific anarthas. So, Shakatasur, for example. Shakatasur represents several things. Each demon represents several anarthas. That's another interesting thing. Shakadasura represents misconceptions arising by carrying the load of misconceptions and bad philosophies. Shakata, it's a whole cart carrying the utensils. Similarly, if we have a Shakatasura tendency in us, that means we are overburdened by misconceptions and deviant philosophies. And therefore, we are unable to appreciate pure Krishna's philosophy. And Shakatasura also represents laziness arising out of bad habits or attachment to the mode of ignorance. Bad habits are like Shakatasura. So by hearing Shakatasura pastime, Krishna, we are inviting Krishna to kill that demon within us. Pralambasura represents an external show of devotion while maintaining lust for the opposite sex. This is Pralambasura. And Balaramji killed Pralamba. Dhenukasura, he represents ass-like neophyte mentality which can't appreciate books of previous acharyas and forbids others to read them. So Prabhupada in one purport says he is eager to translate the books of other acharyas, previous acharyas, and one should read them and understand the philosophy from various angles of vision. So if we neglect to study these commentaries, then it could be out of ass-like mentality that Dhenukasura represents. Vyomasura represents the pride, thinking that we are more expert in bhakti than other devotees. That is Vyomasura. And the forest fire demon represents sectarianism. Due to sectarianism, we can't accept anyone outside our own group of Vaishnavas. Anyone outside our group is a deviant or inferior. Forest fire also represents disagreement with other sampradayas and mutts. Internal discord among devotees and infighting. All these are like symptoms of the demon of forest fire. And Brahma Vimohan Leela, it represents skepticism, unnecessary doubts that we get in our practice of bhakti, and unable to appreciate Krishna's position, Krishna's pastimes. And these are all arising out of this anartha. So in Chaitanya Charitamrita we find this interesting verse. Krishna Tattva, Bhakti Tattva, Prema Tattva Sar. Bhava Tattva, Rasa Tattva, Leela Tattva. So Krishna consciousness means understanding the truth of Krishna, Krishna Tattva, truth of devotional service, Bhakti Tattva, the truth of love of Godhead, Prema Tattva Sar, the truth of emotional ecstasy, Bhava Tattva, the truth of transcendental mellows, Rasa Tattva, and the truth of the pastimes of the Lord, Leela Tattva. So we have to understand everything. We shouldn't focus only on philosophy alone or pastimes alone or ecstasy alone. Everything has to be harmonized nicely and studied nicely. The best way to do is, he writes, just read cover to cover Prabhupada books. You get everything. Starting from small books, Gita, Bhagavatam, CC, everything you get if you go in proper sequence and order. I found some Pune devotees in their youth preaching, they do this. In the first year, they have selected few books like Chant Hare Krishna and Be Happy and Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. Second year, they have certain other books, SSR. Third year they have Bhagavad Gita. Fourth year they have First Canto. Something like that. In that order. So not everyone is encouraged to read any book. You need qualification. You need eligibility to hear and discuss and understand books according to your level. So that is Krishna consciousness definition. And he writes, this is a nice interesting statement. He says, transcendental subject matters don't all taste the same. Spiritual knowledge tastes sweet. Knowledge of Krishna's pastimes, knowledge of Krishna's potencies is sweeter. And knowledge of devotional service, sweeter still. Similarly, the pastimes of Lord Narayan are sweet. Those of his incarnations are sweeter. And the pastimes of Krishna, the sweetest of all. Among Krishna's pastimes, those in Vrindavan are sweeter still. And those with the gopis are nectarian. Ultimately, Krishna's pastimes with Srimati Radharani are nectarian to the supreme. Extreme. So, but we have to be selective. We can't present these things anyhow. Just because I find something more sweet, I should present it to the audience who are not qualified to hear. Or I know this is sweet, but I am not eligible to hear, so I jump into that. We have to be careful about these things. So when we encounter any audience, most of the people, especially in Kali Yuga, are faithless. And Prabhupada says in one place, preaching means injecting faith where there is none. Instilling faith where there is none. And success in preaching can be measured by how effectively the faithless come to pure faith and the faithful to advanced stages of Krishna consciousness. So that is preaching. We have to make non-devotees into pure devotees and pure devotees into perfect devotees. That is the mission of our movement. In this way, whatever way we can, all our projects and temples are meant to assist in this mission, gradually elevating our faith from Shraddha to Nishtha to pure love of Krishna. So I'll stop here. Any comments, any questions anyone has? Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.